Welcome to the 61st episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank. Today's guest is Danny Eney of Montreal-based Firepole Marketing. He's also the lead author of the book Engagement from Scratch. Danny is a fascinating guy, and the stories of how he got going, I'm sure you will enjoy as much as I did. He started his first entrepreneurial venture when he dropped out of school at age 15, and hearing how he built things from there, well, the word chutzpah comes to mind. If you don't know what that means, it's basically this guy has a lot of nerve, but it's worked for him. Although there are many people out there who say they can teach you how to grow a business and make money online, Danny brings to his teaching an actual background in educational technology. As you'll hear in the stories, his first several businesses were in that field, and he might not have known anything going into them, but he certainly learned a lot along the way. He's got a lot of great tips and advice in here, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it, and I'll chat with you briefly at the end.
My name is Danny Eney. I'm the creator of a business called Firepole Marketing. I'm the co-author of a book called Engagement from Scratch. Through my book, my business, and our variety of activities online, we teach small business owners and entrepreneurs how to be better at online marketing, particularly marketing that's focused around audience and audience engagement. So finding the people who are going to really resonate with your message and connecting with them in a more powerful way than most businesses today succeed in doing. And there are substantial ramifications in terms of what that does for you and your business, which are fantastic.
So Danny, what was your background? What got you into this?
Well, I've been an entrepreneur for, I like to say, longer than my adult life. I quit school when I was 15 to start my first business.
Wow. What was that business?
Way back in the day, I quit school and I thought, well, I could build websites because that's easy, right? I mean, I knew HTML, so I knew nothing really, but I thought I could do it. But I knocked on some doors and I shook a lot of hands and I was like, you know, this 15-year-old kid who's like, I should build your website. And nobody was interested because I was some 15-year-old kid who didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And so one day I'm sitting with a friend of mine. We're playing a game with his little sister. She's like 6 or 7, whatever it was, one of these educational titles. And he says, you know, I'll bet you could build something like this. And I'll say, you know, I'll bet I could. And again, no idea why. I didn't know how to do any of the things that would be, you know, part of building something like that. I couldn't write code or anything. but I find the box of the game, and I find the address of the company. I call them up. Somehow, I get a meeting with the CEO. This is one of those things that in hindsight, I was like, how in the hell did I do that?
But isn't it great to be young? Nothing stops you because you think you can do everything.
Well, that's it. One of my favorite quotes about entrepreneurship is that entrepreneurs accomplish a lot of what they do because they don't have the experience yet to realize how unrealistic it is.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I walk into the CEO's office and I shake his hand. And I tell him that, you know, I want to build games that you can sell. And I tell him that my mom has a degree in psychology. I tell him that I've conferred with a psychologist. And I've reached the conclusion that the best way for kids to learn is not for them to be doing like math exercises on the screen. It's if they're playing a game and it's fun and they're just learning in the background. Mm-hmm. Now, what he could have said was, no kidding, I've been doing this for 10 years. Get out of my office. But instead of that, he opens up a drawer. He pulls out a document. He blows on it and this cloud of dust flies off it. He says, this is a script that I wrote for a game 8 years ago. Why don't you build it for us? And I say, wow. Sure, sounds great. Like, you know, and I was excited then, and in hindsight now, I mean, what a great gesture of him to make.
Yeah.
And just to give you a sense of how little I knew at the time, he says, so how are you going to build it? And I had a friend who knew Visual Basic. I thought maybe he'd teach me. So I told him, I'm going to build it in Visual Basic. And the guy says, well, isn't that like reinventing the wheel? I mean, you know, why don't you build it in Director? And I tell him, look, if we're going to be working together, clearly I have to be able to adapt to match your business practices. I'll build it in Director. So I go home, I open up Google, I type in, what is Director?
I love it.
So, I mean, I worked on and off on this project for 2.5 years. It got rebooted a bunch of times. It ended up getting canned because it, frankly, wasn't a great game. But I did do some paid work with them, and that was basically my introduction to real business, and I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity that they gave me.
Wow. And so where did you go from there? What happened next?
I bounced around through a bunch of things. So I did online telecommunications services startup, which was a great idea that did not do well for a couple of reasons. The first is that it was about a decade ahead of its time. And the second is that I was like 16, didn't know how to do any of the things that I was excited about creating. So, you know, all talk mostly, but it was a great learning experience. And I got involved in a bunch of different stuff, but it all kind of came back to this where I started in this educational technology space. And so a bunch of years later, this would have been about 2007, I was building this literacy education technology startup. We were building software that teaches kids how to read, which was my startup that I kind of built from the ground up and built a team, and we raised a bunch of money, which was very exciting. But I was this young and experienced CEO in a very complicated, like the education space is probably the most complicated industry in the world.
Really?
Just because there's so much complicated legislation and stuff is divided between who's in charge. Is it the parents, is it the teachers, the schools, the school boards, the districts? It's incredibly complicated, very long buying cycles, not clear who controls the budget. Everyone's too busy, overworked, not enough expertise. You know, parents are shown, you know, product after product, and most of it does not work according to scientific research about the impact on learning. Most educational technology has zero impact. So they're like, you know, I can't tell the difference. I'll get whatever my kid is excited about. So chicken and egg problem. And the teachers are again, tons of options, and they basically say, look, if this is revolutionary and I have to change the way I teach, well, I don't have time. But if it's not revolutionary, I'm not interested. I'm like, well, what? So, you know, long story short, young and experienced CEO, very complicated market. I realized that we had to kind of pivot and change directions just a little bit too late. And we had this great plan, but in 2008, the markets crashed, and the money that we needed to make those changes, just it wasn't available. And so that all kind of imploded. And after kind of nursing my wounds for for a year or two, I've always been a writer and a strategist, kind of in addition to everything else, and that kind of evolved into what I'm doing today.
Okay, so talk briefly about what it is that you're doing today. And what I'm particularly interested in, you're in sort of the internet marketing space, very, very crowded business space with a lot of experts out there giving people advice. How have you made yourself be different or stand out?
Well, I would push back. I mean, a lot of people would say that we're in the internet marketing space, but I really don't see it that way.
Okay.
The internet marketing, quote unquote, space, especially with the connotation that you and I have in mind, it's people making money online, teaching other people how to make money online.
Yep.
It's borderline pyramid schemey. There's some good information in there. There's some smart people in there. There's a lot of people that what they do is not that great, frankly, and what they teach is not that effective. But putting all of that aside, like, you know, the dubious ethics of some of the content that's there and all of that, and basically you've got an industry that is selling information.
Yes.
And information of limited value in a lot of cases. Like, you know, you're chasing after the last loophole that just closed in Google's algorithms or whatever.
Yeah.
We do not sell information. We are an education company, and there's a world of difference between writing an ebook or filming a bunch of videos and throwing them in a members area and letting people buy access to actually being an education company. We're an online school, basically. We teach marketing principles that are not very tied to a short window of opportunity when this or that loophole happens to be open. Our stuff has worked for a long time, will continue to work for a long time because it's not dependent on this or that technology. But more importantly, we don't just give a bunch of information and say, okay, you're on your own, best of luck. We are a real organization. We've got, there are five people on my team who I hired and trained personally who support our students, answer all of their questions. We really see ourselves as educators. That is what we do. And it's, I mean, if you ask any of our students, they'll say without a doubt, that is the enormous distinction. And I mean, that is why we're comfortable standing behind the results that we promise. The guarantee that comes with the flagship training program that we sell, the Audience Business Masterclass, we tell them, look, it's not a get-rich-quick thing. It's going to take time. It's going to take work. We're talking about 10 to 20 hours a week, every week, consistently for about a year. But if you put in that time, you do the work, and you reach out to us when you need help, then I guarantee that you will build a business that is generating at least $3,000 to $6,000 a month consistently, sustainably, and growing And if not, I will give you your money back, and I'll also give you an extra $1,000 out of my pocket.
Have you ever had to deliver on that?
We have not, because...
Have you ever had people try to claim it?
We have not, no, because it works. Because the only people who do not get results are the people who have just flaked out. Like, they signed up, and they decided that, you know what, I'm busy, and I don't really want to do the work. And I respect that choice. That's another very challenging thing about the quote-unquote internet marketing world, is that a lot of people will buy a piece of information and there's no follow-up, there's no support, and they'll just put it on a shelf until another sparkly, shiny object catches their attention. They'll buy that and they'll hop from course to course to course.
Mm-hmm.
Our training is thorough enough and there's enough support and encouragement that if people give it half a chance, they're either going to put in the time and get the results they want, or they will, in some cases, come to the realization that, you know what, this is really not what I want. And that's okay, because being an entrepreneur is not for everyone. And that's an important realization to have. There's been, you know, there's a lot of kind of mythology around what it's like to do business online. Like, yeah, it's cheap, it's easy, it's free, it takes no work. You just, you know, fill in this magic secret formula that you have to discover, and then money starts spitting out of your CD-ROM drive. And mm-hmm. That's not true. It's just like any business. Is it easier in some ways? Sure. Are there advantages to the online business model? Yes, absolutely. But mm-hmm. It's still a business. It's still real work. I mean, you know, building a business online is passive the way owning a restaurant is passive. But, like, you've got to build that restaurant first.
Right. So what do you see among your students? What are the biggest challenges that the hurdles that normally stop them?
The biggest hurdles that normally stop students, there are two sets of hurdles, and we've done our best to kind of be there to support them through it to the extent that they reach out to us, because our students are adults. So, you know, they have to reach out and take advantage of these resources we make available. But the challenges are, you get a bunch of information, you read a great book, you're inspired, you're fired up, it gets you thinking, but then there's something that you're not sure about, you get stuck, and that's it, that's as far as it goes. And so, especially in the world of building a business, the first stage is figuring out, well, who are you going to serve, how are you going to serve them in a way that's going to be meaningful, valuable, that they're going to want to pay for, that you can be differentiated so that you're, you know, they have a reason to choose you over everyone else that's out there. And that sounds, or people assume, that that's going to be really easy to figure out. Like, you know, I'm going to snap my fingers and 3 days later, that's it, it's solved. Mm-hmm. And it takes some time. And we really emphasize to our students that, you know, one of the watchwords in our program is iteration. You're going to have what you're doing, and you're going to validate and explore, and you're going to go back and change things. You're going to iterate. And that doesn't mean you're making a mistake. That means you're following the process. You're doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Now, it's a lot easier when there's someone to support you. And so that's why we encourage our students, if you get stuck, if you have any questions on our content, on anything that you're learning, email us and we will advise you. We will guide you. We offer for the students who need that extra level of support. They can, because we have worksheets and stuff, there's actual homework with all of these lessons. It's really like a school. They can send us their homework. And we will not grade it in the sense of A, B, C, or D, but we'll review it, we'll give them feedback. You know, this makes sense. This is kind of, I don't know, you might want to do a little more digging here. And so that's the first thing, that iteration, rather than kind of, you know, having a half-baked idea and rushing ahead, and you don't end up creating something with it, A, because it probably wasn't viable, and B, because it wasn't that well thought out. And so you're really not as committed to it as you may have originally thought in that, you know, 30 seconds of initial excitement.
Well, and it's interesting, too, when I think in terms of finding a niche. And I mean, I've been a marketer for 30 years. I certainly understand the importance of niche. And that said, I've often struggled with it. So for instance, I lived in France for a year. And when I was coming back to Canada, I figured, okay, I really want Canadian companies to get more active online, to do more e-commerce. I want people to be able to buy from Canadian companies. And so I felt my niche was Canadian companies. And it just doesn't work as a niche. So, you know, partially because if you're actually a retailer in Canada and you're thinking about setting up e-commerce, you don't do a Google search for Canadian e-commerce experts. That's just not the way it works. So it can be very challenging to come up with that appropriate niche.
Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult because you kind of have blinders to it yourself, because in every kind of hypothetical market definition, every business case that you construct, there are half a dozen or a dozen assumptions that are baked into that.
Yes.
And to you as the person who has this idea they're excited about, those assumptions are semi-invisible.
Yes, absolutely.
And so we make you write it down. And once you spell it out, you can examine, does this make sense, does it not? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes some of them do, and you tweak the idea. But in all cases, it comes out a lot stronger and more robust. So that's, I said there were two areas that people struggle with. That's the first.
Yes. Okay.
The second is technology. The fact is that we are talking about a business that is online. So that means driven on some level by technology. And so technology is a big part of it. And you definitely need to have an attitude of, you know, I'm willing to explore and figure things out. I tell people, you know, sometimes people just refuse to have anything to do with the technology. They're like, you know, yeah, I'll get someone who'll be in charge of that. And that doesn't work. It's like saying that you want to open up a bakery and you refuse to learn how to turn the oven on or off. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand a little bit. But at the same time, technology is, for someone who's new to it, and anytime you're getting into a technology that is unfamiliar, especially if you're not of the generation that has kind of been born with it and, you know, poking around and playing with things, you're not worried about breaking something. Which is not to say you can't. I've broken my site on different occasions. But
yeah.
I tell people on my team, because, you know, everyone's like, you know, you're dealing with a sensitive system. It's like, oh my God, what? And it's like, look, we have backups. I've broken our site in the middle of a launch. Like, you know, it happens. Don't worry. You know, it's not like we're working in an operating room, right? Nobody's going to die.
Right.
But people have that fear and they have that concern. And so what we tell people, because we've really got to strike this balance between, on the one hand, we don't want people to get stuck. We want to support them. But on the other hand, the role of education is not to do something for them. It's to empower them. And
right.
So we offer this to all of our students. There's no extra cost to this. They get 90 days of unlimited access to this. It's called, I call it, 31-minute mark tech support. So the rule is, whatever they're trying to do, they've got to spend 30 minutes trying to figure it out on their own, whether that means poking around in the back or Google searching or whatever.
Right.
But at the 31-minute mark, if they're still stuck, they reach out to my tech team, and they'll get it sorted. This is any technology relating to setting up your business. We'll help you get it sorted, whether that means answering your question or writing a procedure for you to follow or getting on Skype with a screen share to show you how
that's
to do it.
That's awesome. Now, that's a real differentiator in my mind, because, you know, I've followed a lot of the people who offer these online marketing courses, and I haven't seen anyone else do that.
And you know what? I tell that to, you know, other people in the industry or people who, you know, they're getting to know us and what we do. So, you know, do they want to promote us or not? That kind of stuff. And their first reaction is they hear about all the support that we're offering. They hear about the technology stuff. They're like, and how much does this cost? And I tell them what the price is for the whole program, because they're expecting it to be like a five-figure kind of thing. And it's not. It's like, you know, between, you know, $600 or $800, depending on the structuring. So it's, we're not talking, and it's spread over six payments. So it's, you know, you're never spending more than, you know, $100, $150 a month. So it's really not that bad. And they're like, how can you afford that? How does it work out?
And the answer is?
Well, the answer is two things. And this comes back to this whole, you know, quote-unquote internet marketing space. This whole industry is very young. It's very nascent. And there are some, again, there are some very smart people doing really great things. But there's a lot of people who've kind of rushed in, and just because, you know, they're the first ones into a very young industry, so there's a gold rush. So they make money just by being there.
Yeah.
And particularly in this space, because you're selling people basically dreams of, you know, being rich and famous and successful, the price for information in this industry has been very, very inflated, right? Where it's like you buy something and you're like, if you objectively evaluate, was this worth the, you know, $997 that I paid for? It's like, come on, in what world, right? It's not.
Well, and what I find frustrating is, and, you know, I've heard a lot of these gurus say, give away your best stuff because you want to get people into your program. But then you join the program and what you're getting is second-rate stuff. So,
well, I actually disagree with that.
I've had that experience.
Oh, no. I think a lot of people do that, but I think that's more a function of a misalignment of incentives.
Okay.
Where if you build a training program, you build it once, and you build it with, in the best of cases, the best of your knowledge and the best of your resources and all that when you build it. And then you're out marketing it, and you get instant feedback on the marketing because some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so the marketing gets iterated and iterated and iterated and improved and improved and improved. And the product, the same product you've been selling for a year and a half.
Right.
It hasn't changed at all. Yeah. And so there's this misalignment of incentives, but there's also, I think that's what it comes down to in large degree. I agree with the idea of giving away your best stuff, but I disagree with what is the definition of best stuff. For someone who's just getting to know you, your best stuff is not the same as for someone who is bought into your training and is working with you, because their level of investment and commitment to you is different. If you're just getting to know me and I'm like, here is 6 hours of video. Well, you know, we're not there yet, right? You're not going to put in 6 hours of your time to go through my videos. It's kind of like walking down the street and there's a restaurant and they're handing out samples, right? If they're handing out, here, try this little, you know, meatball on a little toothpick. Mm-hmm. Sure, you'll try it. And if you like it, you might come back later. But if they're out there and he's like, here, have a plate of spaghetti. And it's like, that's weird. I'm on my way to somewhere. I may not be hungry for a meal. I don't have time for this. And so it doesn't work. So I completely agree with give away your best stuff, but best is relative to the context that you're in.
Yeah. Well, and I think what I have found disappointing is when they haven't updated. And I think you really hit it there when you talked about you're constantly iterating and the market evolves so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The tools evolve so quickly that if they're not constantly updating their materials, that's what's left me at times with this feeling of getting second-rate stuff.
For sure. And I mean, you know, our training is a little more than a year old, which is not long in the history of a product. And we're now in the process of just finishing this massive reboot where we reviewed and revised all of our scripts, re-recorded and recreated all of the content so that it's clean, it's fresh, it's... Because you learn stuff over the course of a year, right? I mean, a lot of the issue here, and this comes down to, I think it's bad business and it's bad education. So it's I don't get why people get it. People do this other than just being lazy. But people really shortcut the creation of good content, which is in the long term, it's absurd because, you know, ultimately your students are your marketing, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you're not getting results for people, if you're not helping them, then, you know, what are you doing? There's no sustainability. But, you know, people will say, hey, I'm going to do this. So, you know, they sell, let's say, a live webinar series. So get on a call, I'll do a live delivery, and, you know, I'll sell it for whatever amount of money, and then they record it, and then they stick those recordings in a members area. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's the program that I'll sell to people now. And that is so messed up, because a good delivery of content in a live context is not good delivery of something pre-recorded. Live, it's like, you know, you can respond to the questions people are asking live on the call, you can make it dynamic, you can make it interactive. Recorded, and it's like, you just wasted 90 minutes of my time to teach me 20 minutes of stuff.
Right, yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense at all. And what that does is that makes permanent the delivery of a content that is probably in a form where it wasn't ready to be delivered in that way. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very problematic. Like, it's problematic from a selling something of value and helping your students, but it's also, it's just lazy business.
Yeah, totally. Now, Danny, one of the things that I've struggled with, for instance, is I look at the successful internet marketers and even you, where there's this tendency to send a lot of emails, like daily emails or almost daily emails. And the professional in me kind of balks at that, and particularly because often the emails will have these really catchy headings that make it seem like it's really personal and really familiar when it isn't really. How have you grappled with that dilemma?
I push back on a couple of things that you just said. And obviously, you know, we can agree or disagree. That's fine too, right? But
yeah.
The first is that you were saying that it's not really personal, and I disagree. When I write emails, even if they're going out to 30,000 people, I'm writing an email from me to each individual. The context of that email, they all came to me. I'm connected with them in pretty much the same way, which is why I want to tell them the same thing. But it is an email from me to them, and if someone replies to one of those emails, that reply goes back to me. And I do have a lot of conversations with people in that way. And it's interesting because, like, you know, with 30,000 subscribers, we're starting to reach a scale where that's starting to be a lot of email.
Yes.
So that's an interesting challenge that I'm exploring. So if you want to have me back in you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, I can tell you how we handled it.
I may well do that.
But beyond that, I disagree about the frequency of email as being a problem. A lot of email is not a bad thing. I get responses from a lot of people saying, you know, you email me more frequently than any other marketer, but yours are the only emails that I really make a point of reading. So it's not that people don't, the idea of I'm busy, send me less stuff is wrong. It's I'm busy, stop wasting my time with things that aren't useful. And we have a lot of people in our lives that we are happy to be in very frequent communication with, right? Whether that be people who are close in our personal lives, you know, our significant others, our siblings maybe, our close friends. Maybe it's in our professional life, right? We can have a business partner. And the paradigm that I use to look at in terms of the relationship that I'm in with everyone who I work with, whether it's a member of my audience, whether it's actually a student. We don't have customers. We have students. So whether it's a student or a member of the community is a relationship of partnership. And within the context of what we can basically afford to invest in that relationship by virtue of what they've invested, you know, if people are there for free, we can only do so much. Mm-hmm. But within that context, within that boundary, I see it as a relationship of partnership. And we will be there for them as much as they are there for themselves. And so with our students, we tell it to our students. If you want to get like above and beyond incredible support, you need to do two things. You need to work hard on your own business.
Yeah.
And you have to reach out to us when you need help. And of course, you have to be nice to us.
Which
we overlook sometimes. I mean, not often. We have a great community. But like, you know, if I should write a post sometimes, you know, how to make sure you do not get good support. It's like, you know, be rude and threaten us and be mean. No, we're not going to be helpful then. Like, what do you expect? Come on.
Not. Well, what I really think is hilarious is when people get all angry about the service they're getting when they're not even paying, you know, mm-hmm. like who will contact Dropbox or whatever, and they're still on the free version of it and say, well, why can't it do this, that, and the next thing? And, you know, what kind of crappy service is this? It's, well, you know, guys, there's only so much you can expect. I'd like to just go back a little bit. You said you've got five people on your team right now. How did you get to that stage? Like you started, mm-hmm. okay, so you had these other business, you started off in this, how did you break through and then how did you grow it? And
yeah, for sure. We're actually, so I have five people who are dedicated to student support. We're actually, we're nine people and we have an intern starting, at the end of this week, actually. So that'll make us 10. And that in itself was cool because we've never had an intern before. The guy, like, he found us online. He reached out. He's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're in Montreal. Can I please come and be your intern? And I'm like, we don't have a procedure for this. But, let's, he's a cool kid. So we're like, yeah, let's see what we can do. But you start slow. So Fireball Marketing started out as a partnership. Myself and Peter Vagopoulos, my partner to start this. And Megan, who was my assistant at the time, Megan, who is my kind of right-hand at Fireful Marketing, she's been with me almost 4 years before there was a Fireful Marketing. Mm-hmm. So she was my assistant, and I was working on this part-time, Peter was working on this part-time, and Megan was helping out part-time in addition to the other stuff she was doing for me. And shortly after we started this, Peter had his first child, and so he, like, his priorities shifted and he couldn't be available, and so kind of he stepped out of the business, which, you know, that's fine. People have their priorities. I respect that. In the first year, Fireful Marketing was really something that I did part-time, and Megan helped out with part-time while I was building and maintaining my offline consulting practice, you know, going to networking events, shaking hands, doing all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's over the course of 2011. 2011, which was the January 1st, 2011, Fireful Marketing was at zero. No traffic, no subscribers, nothing. Mm-hmm. By the end of that year, we probably made some money, I don't know, $10,000, $15,000 from Fireful Marketing. That's not a full-time income by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But that whole year was about building the foundation and building relationships and getting exposure. And all of that positioned us so that in 2012, we did over $250,000 in revenue because there were a lot of people there. And so halfway through 2012, I hired two more people to join the team. And like the pace of growth has just been crazy. Like literally halfway through 2012, two more people joined us. So then there were four. And over just the last, over the course of 2013, we again more than doubled in size.
Wow. So what did you do back in 2011 to get attention, to get noticed in the first place?
An awful lot of guest posting.
Okay.
Basically writing stuff that would be of value to the audiences of larger blogs and offering that content to them.
Yeah.
And I like that as a strategy for getting, I don't do much of that anymore because the return in terms of growth that you're going to get is very linear, right? The, mm-hmm. if you have currently have 5 subscribers or 50,000, the amount of subscribers you're going to get from a guest post on XYZ blog is going to be the same. So yeah. as a percentage growth of your audience, it's going to get smaller and smaller the bigger you get. So it makes more sense when you're starting out.
Sure.
But it's not just about the number of subscribers you get. It's about a way of building relationships with people when you've got no other way to get your foot in the door. And if you grow to, I advocate a tipping point of about 1,000 subscribers. If you grow to that point by doing things that build these relationships, then by that point, you'll be in a position to get a lot more traction and support. And so along the way, doing all these guest posts, I also built relationships that allowed me to write my book, Engaging from Scratch, that I co-authored with 30 authorities in the industry. And like, I didn't get phenomenal growth over the course of 2011 because there was a lot that I was still figuring out. So on November 28th, 2011, we had 880-ish subscribers, which is not a very big number considering that I published about 80 guest posts that year. But I had also built all these relationships. So on November 29th, I published my book, and my audience literally doubled in size overnight. And the pace just kept on increasing.
So how did you convince all those people to participate in your book?
So there were a few kind of key big-name people who participated, namely Guy Kawasaki and Brian Clark and Mitch Joel. So I had, through a kind of complicated series of events of kind of being in the right place at the right time and seizing an opportunity, I had promoted Guy Kawasaki's book Enchantment when it came out. And so we did a bunch of stuff. Well, we did a bunch of stuff. I interviewed him on a podcast, stuff like that. And so when I reached out to him and said, hey, could you please contribute to this book? There was enough of a relationship that he was willing to do me a favor, basically, because let's be honest, he was doing me a favor. It's not like the book has actually done very well, but we couldn't anticipate that at the time. Likewise, I had written for Copyblogger maybe half a dozen or a dozen times, and so Brian, again, was willing to read my email, and I made a good case, and I explained why it wouldn't be a lot of work and would really be a good opportunity and all that. I made it easy for them to say yes. And Mitch Joel is a fellow Montrealer. Mitch Joel, you've met the guy. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
I think I'd met him at a networking event where he was a speaker years ago, and I'd emailed him back and forth a couple times, and I just reached out to him, and he very generously offered me a bit of his time. And once you have a few people on board, and this was actually the strategy for the book, you don't want 30 of the biggest names in your industry because, I mean, I'm very grateful to Guy Kawasaki for participating in the creation of the book. But he's interviewed and showcased everywhere all the time. So, you know, the book goes live. He's like, okay, that's nice. I'll tweet it. But, like, you know, it's not a huge thing for him. But from then I could go to kind of 27 or 30 of the kind of medium-sized players in the industry and say, hey, do you want to be in a book with Brian Clark and Guy Kawasaki and Mitch Joel? And they're all like, hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm finding that with my podcast, too, now that I've had several of the big names on, it just gets a lot easier. Not that I was ever getting refused, I suppose. Maybe I shouldn't say that it gets a lot easier because I've always been very fortunate that people have been willing to talk. But I just sort of have a feeling the fact that I can throw around names like Guy Kawasaki.
It makes
helps.
A difference, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You even if you can do it to start with, it gets easier. Like, people are a lot more eager and enthusiastic, and it just happens a lot faster. But so it's not just that it was easier to get them on board, but more importantly, because ultimately Engagement from Scratch is about building my own audience. That was what it was for in terms of the business case. Mm-hmm. So what that allowed me to do is I really put a lot of effort and time and energy and some money into making the book look as good and feel as good as I could. So, yeah. You know, the book was published. I sent 2 physical copies in the mail to everyone who contributed. Like, I wanted it to really feel like, oh, my God, check it out. I'm in this book, which means that for everyone who's kind of this up-and-coming rock star but not quite there yet, so they've got, you know, 5,000, 10,000 people who watch what they do. They're like, hey, everyone, look, I was just in this book. Check out how awesome this is.
Yes.
And that kind of latched and leveraged its way up to a lot of really cool stuff.
We're running out of time here, but I'd just like to come back to one question then, this whole market niche thing, because you haven't, it sounds like you haven't had a strategy of focusing on a particular industry or segment. I mean, you are teaching people how to market whatever they want to market online. Why have you not needed to do that to niche down further?
Well, I would push back on both counts. I'd say, first of all, that we have needed to, and we would have done a lot better if we'd done it better and sooner.
Okay.
Because starting Fireful Marketing, we really didn't do a good job of that. And it took time to kind of figure it out. But there are a lot of different ways that you can define a niche. So a niche can be a specific industry. It can be a specific scale of business. Those are ways to define a niche. You can also define a niche by an approach or by a set of values. And so this really, it took a couple years to emerge for us really to find out who we are through the eyes of the people who connected with us and resonated with what we were putting out there. And like, there's no question in my mind that if I'd figured this out sooner and everything had been aligned with all this from the get-go, we would be way bigger now. But, you know, you work with what you've got. But the niche that we've kind of taken hold of and that has emerged for us has really been less around a specific industry and more around the approach of building a business that is driven by an audience. And the idea of doing business online, marketing online in a way that is driven by substance and by value. And that is something that matters to a lot of people. It doesn't matter to some people, but that's not our niche. And the people that matters to are the people that we serve, people who really do believe that business can be better and it can be about more than just, you know, finding the next loophole as a way to make money. And I really
But I mean,
that.
I can easily name a dozen other internet marketing guys who have that similar attitude and who probably do really good stuff. So how do you differentiate?
You should ask the people who follow us. It's the kind of thing that a lot of people claim, but it's a hard thing to sell. And I'll say straight up, I mean, just, and this is something that also I think it distinguishes us from a lot of people, is that we absolutely recognize and acknowledge and share publicly that we're still figuring this out in some ways. I mean, I think we're several steps ahead, which is why people watch what we're doing and try to learn from us. But we're not one of those people who talks about how, you know, struggle is important, but really they only talk about the one struggle they had when they're, you know, driving their BMW to their meeting of, you know, fellow rich, successful entrepreneurs. We expect our students to push themselves out of their comfort zones, and we are doing that all the time as well. Just like we tell people they need to iterate to find what is their exact angle and direction and market, so are we iterating. And we're closer to it than we've ever been, but it's something that we're going to continue to get closer to, and it's a moving target. And so it's not something that holds still. So is there something there? Yes. Can I articulate it a lot more clearly now than I could have before? Yes. And you know, this, both of those things are validated by the fact that, you know, regardless of how specific or not it may look, the fact is that 30,000 people feel like this does clearly define and speak to them.
Right.
Is it as clear as it could ever be? Is it as precise as it could ever be? I hope not, because I still hope we can do better.
Sure. Yeah. Is there anything that I should have asked you and I haven't?
That's a great question. Because there, you know, there's so many things that could be asked or could be talked about. I really enjoyed this conversation. I enjoyed that you were so interested in the actual work that we do and the things that we sell. Often I do podcast interviews and people just want to talk about, you know, what's your number one tip for business? Like, it's like, come on, let's.
Well, I'll be honest, Danny, because I'm building my business. So, yeah, so I was being a little selfish, I guess, to my questions, but I think they'll be very valuable for the audience, too.
Thank you.
I have to confess that when I first came across Danny's stuff, I thought, oh, right, just another internet marketing guy. And yeah, although I had subscribed to his stuff, I'm so overwhelmed with email that I hadn't really been reading it as closely as I could have or should have. Well, this interview totally changed my perspective on the man. He is thoughtful, intelligent, and ironically for someone who dropped out of school, he's a great teacher. I would really encourage you to head on over and check out his website and blog and book, and I don't doubt for a minute that you can learn a lot from him. That's all for today. I will, of course, have links to his materials and blog on the website at frankonlinemarketing.com. And I would love to get your feedback on Danny and on any of the other interviews that you've heard me do. You can always call me at 1-866-544-9262. That's a free call. Or there's a little button on the side of my website that you can click to leave a voicemail message. And if you do that, I'd be happy to play your message on the show. And of course, you can always leave comments on the website or send me an email, Tema, T-E-M-A, at frankonlinemarketing.com, or follow me on Twitter at Tema Frank, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to chatting with you next week. Bye.